That's all right. Nope, no worries, no worries. We're a little bit ahead of schedule. Well, I guess we're a little ahead of schedule. Your case is the next, the last one that we have, and I have, Mr. Galata, you do not have a lawyer, sir. Come on up to the table to my left and your right. Ms. Barrett is here for the Attorney General, and you did just sign in.
Yes, ma'am, I did.
Okay, that's great. Okay.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mr. Galata, this comes on your appeal of the Circuit Court decision. And I know you've been in the courtroom for a bit, so you've had the opportunity to see some folks argue. I'll just tell you very briefly, you've got 15 minutes to tell us why the Circuit Court was wrong. If you would like to save some of that time to respond to the Attorney General, you're welcome to do so. The lights here will tell you how much time you have left. It'll sort of be up to you to do that. So would you like to save some of your 15 minutes, or would you just like to go ahead and argue?
I doubt I can finish in 15 minutes, so I'm sorry to ask for the 15 minutes. My case is a little, well, to say the least, it's sealed. So I do appreciate if what I say, because I am involved with active investigations right now.
Okay.
With I'm as a witness, material witness for the government.
Okay. Well, come on up to the podium, and you've got 15 minutes, and we are happy to hear from you then. Okay. Okay.
I tried to ask the court some of the documents because it is sealed. It is in my cell phone. And I asked the sheriff down to allow to enter. He said no. So I apologize if some what I say is not. I mean, you have it because it's sent to you because it's under seal. But I cannot reproduce it and just have it in public.
Okay.
Your Honor, as you can see, in 2004, the board suspended the license because of the Medicare billing. And unfortunately, it happened because 2004, in my 5 year solo practice, it's either you take care of the patients or you spend all the time documenting so you can stand good in front of the Medicare or whoever gonna audit you. And I don't have an experience in solo practice, so and I take care of my patients, and there was no time. Mr. Moran, who was the state legislator, said, Hazem, I don't know nothing about billing. They're offering you this plea. Take it or leave it. And I took it. That was the only plea. And in that plea, you have to surrender your license permanently. I send it to the Virginia, and Virginia decided to suspend the license. Between 2004 until today, actually, I'm leaving the court. I'm meeting with FBI agents. But in 2004, I stayed in the education field. I kept my CME hours. I went overseas. I was a CIA agent for the embassy in Dubai, and we landed some money laundering and people. My act was exposed through one silly call that was interrupted through the embassy. I was deported, came back in 2009. I worked in universities. I kept my education till today. 2012, my undercover work with Prince William for certain Middle Eastern people offering and raising millions of dollars through Virginia Cigarette Tax Board, through Maryland Task Force, through New York Controller Office, through the ATF and the FBI. We landed 16 people in jail and about $4 million in contraband. My activity at that time had accidentally led to the use of one credit card that was left, and that landed me with a misdemeanor in Prince William for $168. And that's the only two times I have violated this law. When you work undercover, you work undercover, and there are sometimes your life is either on the line or other agents on the line, and there are people who has been introduced in that ring. As a Palestinian, I am thankful for being in the States. As a father of two doctors, I'm thankful for raising them. At least we get home and we don't die every day. Being a refugee, I came in 1990 from Kuwait, and I did my residency again. I was practicing overseas. And as a foreigner, you have something what they call J-1 visa. And you have to serve in the underserved areas in the Appalachian. 2 years is supposed to be committed, and we're supposed to help the poor. The employer, unfortunately, who abused the Labor Department, has two statements for me. Because I found myself working for his clinics and emergency rooms in Kentucky and the states which we're not supposed to be in. So you can either continue frauding the government and make this man richer, or you can do the right thing. I'm an internist. I can do anything with people with bad hearts, with bad sugar, with bad blood pressure, with bad cancers. But I cannot deal with trauma in the emergency room. Neither I can see kids. I cannot. Maybe I'll save his life. I don't know. But I am not that person. And I'm not going to break the law. And he did. He has a lawyer, very rich lawyer in D.C. And she said, Hazem, it's either you're going to be deported back to Gaza, and or you, that's your price for your freedom. And call me stupid, but I don't like, I mean, I'm a refugee. I know I'm a refugee, but I can't let somebody, excuse my language, slave me. And I wasn't paid. And I spoke with the Inspector General from the ARC, and Mr. Sparks said, Hazem, sorry, but that's a 2 weeks voluntary deportation. My wife was pregnant. We went up to the detention center up in Pittsburgh. That was the Midwest. And he looked at me. He said, why are you here? I said, well, that's the story. The man felt sorry for me. And I still have his stamp on my Palestinian refugee passport where he said, come, go find your place of work. And I tried. That man landed in big investigation, and he did what he can. And he said to the two of these employees, go to the board in West Virginia and say Dr. Gerada fumbled when he did his exam for stethoscope. And yes, when we examine, the stethoscope will be under 1 centimeter under the apex, because that's where the mitral valve is. I never had any sexual with anybody. And that lady, her cousin, said, he insisted to examine my spleen when I had a skin rash. And yes, infectious mono, people, it's self-limiting disease, can present as rash, but they die if their spleen rupture. And if the spleen is felt at the tip, it means it's already enlarged 4 times than its normal size. Normal human beings don't have their spleen felt. That's the only reason I examined her abdomen. But the board suspended the license 2 months. Even I was working for the VA in Virginia. And I took that action. I brought it to the board in Virginia. I said, here's what they're doing. They said, forget about it. It's closed. And 1997, they closed the case. Ohio, where I have a license, they said, we're suspending your license for 6 months because you didn't tell us. I never practiced in Ohio. I shouldn't be practicing in Ohio. That man asked us to get license in Ohio, but I shouldn't be in Ohio. They said, oh, you should have come retrospectively. Where is it in the laws that we have to go back to a state we never practiced, we never passed? I never entered to Ohio, that you have to tell them what happened in West Virginia and Virginia. Regardless, the law is the law. 1998, license got suspended. 98, come back to Virginia again. I was working with Dr. Miller down in Hopewell. And their group, they have two offices in Colonial Heights and John Randolph Medical Center. And we're seeing about 16 to 18,000 physicians from Cigna to hospitals. Now Virginia, mandatorily, once your license is suspended in another state, you have to show up and say, why did that happen? But they don't do it in a walk-in scenario. No, they issue you automatic suspension. And then they bring you for a hearing. So in June it was suspended in Virginia, and they tell you come in August. Now you have 2 months. You have patients in the hospital that nobody can see. You have patients in the office nobody can see. Automatically, I lost the job. I got my license back in 98, but now I have no job again. So go back up north, and my wife had a school teacher job up in Loudoun County, and now I just have to go and convince somebody to hire me. Nobody would, because now you have three license investigations. So you open a solo practice. Never in my life dealt with something called the billing form. We always get a paycheck every 2 weeks. We see the patient, we treat the patient. I don't know anything about HCFAs. I don't know anything about CPT codes. Medical school, they teach you everything about the heart, but they don't tell you what to do when you get audited. And the people came for an audit. And they looked at the files and they say, Hazem, that's not sufficient. Okay, what do you want me to do? He said, well, you are billing according to the time, not the time, but what the diagnosis of the patient. You're supposed to bill according to the time. Who has a clock when you walk in the patient? That's rude from my side. And I don't know any physician who does it. Regardless, the deal is the deal. I cannot afford lawyers. $400 an hour, and they tell you physicians make money. I did not ever pass to that $400 an hour. And two boys in medical school literally drain you down to the ground. But having kids finish and being doctors, that is enough message. I'm ready to die any day. What I do for the government right now, it's very dangerous. But I cannot live with the shame of somebody saying this man has done this bad. And I'd rather die helping the state and the country that give me a place I call home. That's the only reason I'm doing this for them. I never asked the government for a penny. These people raise money. They're still doing it wrong. I speak their language. I have a business that people use. That's the only thing I do right now in my life. And I'm proud that my kids are doctors. Anything happen to me, I'm ready. I stand in front of God. God asks if you're doing right or wrong. People lie, and if you stand up for them, and he becomes a powerful man, or he has a big lawyer behind him, you cannot stand a chance. That's the bottom line. Regardless, I feel ashamed that I stand against the board. The board is the people who regulate us. I am, I guess, trying to tell them that I am done everything I can. Honorable Judge Hilton in 2017, when I stood in front of him with four prosecutors saying, yes, this man, we allow him to have his license. We took the restriction of his permanent surrender. He can go and apply. I had 2 months to stand and study for the specs exam. This is the only exam that allows physicians to show that the boards, because it's a licensing exam. Specs is a nationwide exam that tells the boards if this man is or is not
certified,
competent or certified. D.C. only authorize specs. If you don't have the specs, they will not get you a license. It's written on the corner. I passed the specs, and I applied to D.C. D.C. asked me, get your license unsuspended from Virginia. Now, I don't have any authority in Virginia. I know my activity with the government has been exposed in certain levels. I'm asked to leave. The government will never say this man was our spy in UAE. This man is our spy with ATF because it's active. Three of these people, unfortunately, are very close to me and are always asked to seal the documents. So I went to Virginia. I asked them one simple question. What do you want me to show you that I'm competent? The answer was, in between brackets, show us that you're competent. Ma'am, I'm asking you, what do you want me to do? You want me to pass the fifth exam? Do you want me to get another 400 CME hours? Do you want me to shadow another two physicians? Show me, tell me, what do you want? They don't tell you. So you do what you can. You don't have a license to show people that you're competent, so you go shadow with physicians, you do your CMEs, you continue teaching. The board, you go and stand in front of them. I ask them gently and nicely three times before finally decided not to take any calls from me. I asked them, can you please, for the love of God, ask for a closed hearing? What I'm going to tell you, because you have people down in Richmond that we are after. The answer was, no. Then I hired a lawyer, a $15,000 lawyer, just to convince them that this man should not come in public. The final negotiation with them that when it's time and we're going to ask something or he's going to say something, we're going to ask to seal the or have a closed session. So I walked in knowing that these people will do what they say. Unfortunately, I'm so stupid that whoever tells me something, I believe him. I was raised that way. I assume the goodness in people until they show something else.
I'm sorry, sir. Your time is up. I will tell you, we have had the opportunity to read your brief and to look at everything that is included in the record, and we will certainly consider it.
And just as a little bit of follow-up to our presiding judge, the nature of this hearing has actually become practically closed because everybody in the room right now is part of the government. We have a government attorney representing the Virginia Board of Medicine. Obviously, we're employees of the state, and these two young ladies right here are law clerks who work for the court, and we have two members of the Sheriff's Department here. So you've essentially gotten your closed argument, the benefit of your closed argument, and we've listened to everything that you have to say and respect what you're trying to tell us.
Thank you. Ms. Barrett, would you like to be heard, ma'am?
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Erin Barrett on behalf of the Virginia Board of Medicine. Dr. Garrada voluntarily applied for reinstatement of his license to practice medicine. This was following a 2004 mandatory suspension by the Virginia Department of Health Professions that was related to his federal criminal matters that he mentioned. As a reinstatement applicant, the burden was on Dr. Garrada to prove that he was safe and competent to resume the practice of medicine. And Dr. Garrada has alleged that the board did not have substantial evidence to deny his petition, that the board violated his due process rights, and that the board failed to conform to required procedure. Dr. Garrada, however, misunderstands Virginia administrative law and has not demonstrated an error of law to this court.
You believe that this case is essentially resolved by a review of the standard of review in this case?
It could be, yes. I'm prepared to argue the points of it. He does point to an incorrect standard on review of substantial evidence in particular. Most of what he has presented the court with is a relitigation of the matter that was before the Virginia Board of Medicine and their findings of fact. His claims that the board lacks substantial evidence don't meet the standard that was announced by the Virginia Supreme Court in Bias. He actually misconstrues the standard, and on brief, he stated to the court that he showed factual evidence which a reasonable mind can see that he is competent to reenter practice. But that's not the standard at issue. The standard is, under the record as a whole, would a reasonable mind have necessarily come to a different conclusion than that of the agency?
And let me ask you this. If the agency had come to a conclusion inconsistent or the opposite of what occurred here, what would be your position? Could you argue that the determination of the Virginia Board of Medicine was wrong as determined by them?
It could have been based on substantial evidence, but again, the standard is that a reasonable mind would necessarily come to a different conclusion.
And I maybe didn't ask the question very well, but would the result or the disposition of what occurs in this case be different based upon the appellate review if the Virginia Board of Medicine had come in and essentially said the determination that was ultimately made, even though it was not made in our favor and was made to the benefit of Dr. Garrotta, would stand appellate review? Could you appeal that determination?
If the trial court had reversed the board determination,
right.
Is that what you're asking, Your Honor?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I could have appealed that based on the board having substantial evidence to issue the denial in the first place. And Dr. Garrotta here can't demonstrate the standard because when he presented the transcript, as was his requirement under the rules, to the Virginia board for it to compile the record to send to the court, he only provided a portion of the transcript. He eliminated the entirety of the Commonwealth's case that was presented before the board. So this court cannot review the entire record that was before the board. And based on that, Dr. Garrotta cannot demonstrate that based on the whole of the evidence that the board heard, a reasonable mind would have necessarily come to a different conclusion.
Thank you.
Dr. Garrotta has also raised the issue of his special purpose examination score and the evaluation that he submitted from the Center for Personalized Education and Professionals, which is the CPEP that was referred to. Those were submitted to the board, but the board was entitled to find that evidence lacking, particularly given the reasons in the order for the denial here, which included Dr. Garrotta's criminal history and his lack of practice in the United States for 13 years at that time. And Dr. Garrotta has brought up on brief another licensee that was before the board for a petition for reinstatement, but that licensee and his outcome are not relevant to Dr. Garrotta or his hearing. In fact, the board was not aware of that licensee. The panel members were not aware of that licensee or the outcome.
Am I reading the record wrong to suggest that he didn't pass some of the things that he was required to do?
Yes. If you look at the record, the way that the specs is scored, it's scored on different categories similar to the bar exam. And each category is ranked based on how you scored on that category. So I believe that's the portion in the record where there's a bar graph and there's a median line and some bars are to the left and some bars are to the right, depending on how the applicant does, how many questions they answer correctly.
And in some respects, he passed. In other areas, he did not pass, as I understand.
Yes. If I remember correctly, the overall score was a point or two above the passing level.
Yeah.
But in certain areas, he was deficient. In other areas, he did better. It just depended on the type of medicine.
And there are times when people are deficient in certain areas, but they're still issued their licenses.
That's correct. And again, he did have a technically passing score. However, the board was looking at the whole of the evidence in this matter and determined the weight of each of the pieces of evidence that it looked at, the specs examination score being one of those pieces of evidence, his criminal history and his description of his criminal history being another. In all this, the board was looking at whether he was safe and competent to return to practice in all facets of his practice, not just his actual practice with a patient, which Dr. Garrotta has focused on with his discussing the specs exam and the CPEP evaluation. As far as the additional licensees that Dr. Garrotta has discussed, and he also included some of their documents in the record improperly, the board can only act on the evidence in front of it. Another licensee that was not before the board at the time of Dr. Garrotta's petition for reinstatement was not relevant to his hearing. Had those panel members been aware of the other licensee or aware of the outcome, they couldn't have even considered that evidence when determining Dr. Garrotta's case.
But I think the argument that Dr. Garrotta is making is that comparison of the situation with the other person, that the determination of the Virginia Board of Medicine was arbitrary and capricious. That's what he's essentially saying.
That is what he's essentially saying, but I would argue that that is waived. He did not raise that to the board or to the Fairfax Circuit Court. He only raises it to this court for the first time in this process of appeal. And he also has complained that the circuit court did not accept evidence. But again, the circuit court sitting in an APA appeal cannot accept new evidence based on the whim of one of the parties. The circuit court was correct to tell Dr. Garrotta that it was not an evidentiary hearing. His evidentiary hearing was before the board. any evidence that he wished the board to consider in its petition, in its consideration of his petition for reinstatement should have been submitted to the board for its review.
But his argument in response to that, and again, if I read the record correct, is that he was essentially precluded from presenting the evidence because of the circumstances that were presented. The board apparently would not accept the evidence, thought that the evidence that he wanted to offer was not relevant to what they needed to do, et cetera.
I don't believe he identified where in the record that occurred, unless I'm mistaken. He presented quite a bit of evidence and quite a bit of testimony at the board hearing, which you can see in the transcript of the formal hearing because he included his full testimony. And there was a lot of back and forth with the board. He submitted quite a bit of documentary evidence. I'm not clear what exactly he's referring to if he's talking about evidence that was not submitted to the board.
He makes reference to one exchange where one of the members of the Board of Medicine wanted him to answer a question with simply yes or no. And his contention is that it's yes with a qualification and or no with a qualification. And the board member said you can only say yes or no, and he was concerned about that.
Well, Your Honor, if you look at that portion of the transcript, the individual asking the question was trying to get to a certain portion of information. Mm-hmm. Dr. Garrado was not answering that question, and similar to this court, if you ask me a question and I don't answer it, you direct me back to the answer of the question. That was what he was attempting to do. If you continue to read through the transcript, there is more back and forth with that particular board member. The board member was respectful the entire time, but was merely trying to elicit specific information so that that board member could make an informed decision on whether Dr. Garrado should return to practice. Dr. Garrado also alleges that the board failed to follow required procedure when it didn't close his hearing under the Virginia Freedom of Information Act. But the portion of the Virginia Freedom of Information Act that he quotes to say that the hearing should have been closed does not apply to board hearings. He doesn't cite the statute in his brief, but I believe it's 2.23711A19, which allows a public body to close to discuss terrorism threats or building structural integrity to the extent that it causes a danger, potential danger to the public. That simply doesn't apply to Board of Medicine hearings. The only exclusion that would have applied to Dr. Garrado's testimony at a board hearing is under 2.23711A16, which allows the board to close a public meeting for discussion or consideration of medical and mental health records. Now, Dr. Garrado has not alleged that such records were at issue or that he requested the hearing to be closed for that purpose. The board could not close the hearing based on the provision that Dr. Garrado found under the FOIA exclusions. And the board cannot violate FOIA merely because Dr. Garrado believes his testimony to be sensitive. It's required to hold an open meeting, has very limited exceptions. Dr. Garrado also states that this was a due process violation, but he does not articulate that. He received a meaningful hearing. He received notice of the hearing. The board denied the reinstatement of application of Dr. Garrado based on the evidence that was before it. Its decision wasn't an error, and the board requested this court uphold the Fairfax Circuit Court order and affirm the order of the board.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll come down and greet folks, and then we are going to be in recess.